Good morning and welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, and along with my friend replacement for this morning, Tom, we thank you very much for joining us this Wednesday morning, November the 6th. We will be talking in a few minutes with Tom Gipping of the Heritage Foundation. Tom thinks the Democrats' impeachment push is way off the scales of justice, so stay tuned for that. And Democrats win the governorship of Kentucky yesterday, and now control Virginia's legislature as well. What is going on? Is this the Donald Trump effect? Well, we're going to ask the keeper of mainstream America's most important poll, the Barber Poll, Andrew the Master Barber, a little bit later in the show. And scientists now saying that to combat climate change, there needs to be fewer people roaming the planet. What? We're going to take a look at that as well. And in our Freedom Works Ultimate Top 10, the top 10 most vulnerable senators up for election next year, which is, by the way, just under a year when we are going to go to the polls. Did you know that? Wow. By the way, Freedom Works, we are sponsored in part by Andrew the Master Barber. And for the best haircuts in Tampa Bay, guys, and I mean the best, I've been all over the place, you got to visit Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. It's just north of Route 580 on Overcash Drive. They're open Tuesday through Saturday. And by the way, they got a little stoplight right in the window. If it's red, come back later. If it's yellow, you wait a little while. If it's green, the coast is clear. It's a big stoplight. Tom, you got to get in there for your haircut. I can see you need one. And so it's Andrew the Master Barber. And he'll be on a little bit later. So we'll talk to him a little bit. Also, you got to go to our website because you can find out who's on our show that's coming up. And not only that, you can also listen to our programs, our past programs, because we have a podcast. OurFreedomWorks.com. O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com. Big Ed sets up all of our programs on there. Big Ed, wherever you are, thank you. OurFreedomWorks.com. All right, we got a lot of things going on. Tom, it's great to have you as my buddy here. Tom doesn't know me from Adam. When I came in the station door this morning, he said, "Can I help you?" I said, "You sure can." And away we go. And I don't know, Big Ed's up taking a little break. I hope he's fine, wherever you are, Big Ed. Miss you. So Tom, you and I will just hang loose on this a little bit. We'll be talking with Tom Gipping at 10:15. In the meantime, let's do a little bit of what's going on here. Last night and yesterday, is this a benchmark of what is to come? We don't know. But Republican incumbent Governor Matt Bevin, he's now at the point of refusing to concede. That's bad news for Republicans when you hear that line, refusing to concede, right? And he was, of course, trying to run for re-election in Kentucky. It's normally a red state, isn't it? What's going on with Bevin? How come he didn't win that handily? But now he's claiming unspecified irregularities. So what is that going to do? Are we going to be sitting around for several weeks? It's a very close race, my friends. Right now, Democratic Attorney General Andy Beshear is leading Bevin by just over 5,000 votes. Now, 1.4 million votes were cast. That's pretty close, isn't it? And if I were Bevin, I would be looking for a recount as well. So they're going to do a recount. Now, the Libertarian candidate probably had something to do with this. John Hicks, he got 2% of the vote. Typically, Libertarians, not always, but typically Libertarians tend to pull conservative voters away. So, if that John Hicks was not in the election, a goodly portion of his votes would probably have gone to Bevin, enough to knock Beshear out of the race. Now, in the meantime, in Virginia, which if you go anywhere near Washington, D.C. and Virginia, every single person that you will come across works for the government. So you know how they're going to vote, right? That state's been turning bluer and bluer and bluer. They have now, for the first time in 26 years, taken complete control of the Virginia State House. So Trump had gotten, gotten out and was trying to push Kentucky's Bevin, and even made mention, I think, of the Virginia situation. So is this going to be sort of a slap in the face to Trump? Is this a sign of things to come for Trump? Bevin had some bad baggage in Kentucky. And, in some cases, it ain't the president that makes the vote go one way or the other. It's local stuff that's going on. So we'll see where all of that goes. And we'll talk further about that scenario with Andrew the Master Barber a little bit later. In the meantime, the U.S. envoy to Ukraine decided he wanted to change what he had to say in front of that committee on this whole impeachment imbroglio. He's pushed back on the claim that President Trump wanted to withhold a meeting with Ukraine's president until Ukraine committed to making an investigation of some allegations against Joe Biden and his son, right? Well, now he says, well, maybe there was a little bit of a quid pro quo there, now that I look back on it. At first, he had said he didn't see any connection between the money that they would get in Ukraine and the investigation by Ukraine of the whole Joe Biden's son connection to the Ukraine utility company. So where that goes, I don't know, but the St. Pete Times, it used to be the St. Pete Times, now the Tampa Bay Times, their biggest headline is right at the top, right across the paper, "Diplomat Changes Testimony." And the subhead, "Ambassador Sondland now says he told Ukraine that USAID was tied to starting an investigation." So we'll see where all of that goes, right? A desperate, desperate attempt. A desperate attempt. A desperate attempt by the Democrats to get Trump the hell out of office. All right. Tom, we're going to take our break now, my friend. We're going to be gone for about 2.5-3 minutes of commercials. And when we come back, hopefully, we're going to talk with Tom Gipping.
There's a reason for the sunshine sky. And there's a reason why I'm feeling so high. Must be the season when that love light shines all around us.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
If you would like to become a wholesale buyer of the premium quality longevity product that you hear about right here on the Tantalk Radio Network for personal service, you can pick up the phone right now and call Lola at 727-441-3311. Again, that's Lola at 727-441-3311. Or for even faster service, log on to TantalkHealth.com. That's TantalkHealth.com. Here's to your health and longevity.
Hi, this is Jay Leno.
Hey, this is Ted Nugent.
Hi, everybody. This is David Hobbs.
Hi, this is Bob Varshu.
Hey, this is Danny the Count Coker.
Hey, this is comedian, author, and most importantly, vintage race car driver Adam Carolla.
Hi, this is Shirley Cha-Cha Muldowney.
I'm John Forrest.
Hey, this is Jack Roush.
And you're listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
That's Nostalgic Radio and Cars with the most fascinating and legendary names in motorsports every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets, from animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune into the show on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back on Freedom Works. Thank you so very much for being with us on this Wednesday morning. Delighted to have Tom Gipping. He is Deputy Director of the Edwin Meese Center for Legal and Judicial Studies and Senior Legal Fellow at the Great Heritage Foundation. Tom, thank you so very much for joining us this morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It is our pleasure. I cannot wait to talk with you, Tom. This whole impeachment imbroglio in Washington, D.C., is draping over almost everything else that is going on in Washington politics now. And I know that that you discuss the very fact that, I say you and the Heritage Foundation, that this whole impeachment process is probably just plain unfair and partisan and unbalanced. And you say that the most important unanswered question, the authority by the Democrats to issue subpoenas while the minority Republicans are not allowed to do such. Could you explain a little bit about that whole process?
Sure. When a committee, of course, in this situation, six different committees have been given the go-ahead to investigate the president for possible impeachable offenses, that first of all, has never been done before in the past. Whether it was Bill Clinton, Richard Nixon, or even most of the impeachments in our history have been of judges, it was only the Judiciary Committee that was authorized to investigate and pursue this process. Today, it's six different committees. And one of the most important tools that a committee has for investigative purposes is the subpoena, which's the way that they can force someone to testify, where they can force someone to provide documents, things like this. It's a very important investigative tool. And again, in the past, both the majority and the minority, that would be the chairman and the ranking minority member, had the same power to issue subpoenas. In other words, they initially, the idea was they would do it together, but if, you know, the other one didn't want to cooperate, they could go to the committee to get authorization to do it, but both of them had to go through the same procedure. Today, again, in a precedent that's never been done before, the majority, in this case the Democratic chairman of these committees, can issue subpoenas on their own, unilaterally, while the ranking minority member, the ranking Republican member, has to get the Democrats' permission to issue subpoenas. You know, the list of different ways that today's impeachment inquiry and investigation is being done differently than the past is a very long one.
Now, we've got the Democrats, I guess, doing all of this behind closed doors. And we know that Adam Schiff, who was heading the main committee that's doing all of this, is allowing certain pieces of information to come out and then not allowing others. Does Adam Schiff have the right to determine in his committee as the head what information can come out? Or is he going behind everybody and grabbing a couple of reporters and saying, okay, here's, I'm going to give you some of the information in the testimony? I mean, how is that? How are we coming to learn different things like that?
Well, the answer to your question is yes, he is allowed to do that. I mean, he's the chairman of the Intelligence Committee. and each committee has its own rules with regard to such things. If they hold a hearing and the chairman chooses to disclose information from that hearing, even if it was a closed hearing, he does have the authority to do that. But the game that Democrats are playing here is they're saying, well, we're technically allowed to do this, but that does not answer the question whether they should. Impeachment is probably the most serious thing that the Congress can do, short of declaring war. And in the past, steps were taken to make sure that the impeachment investigation, the impeachment process, was legitimate, fair, was as nonpartisan as possible. I just saw an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal by Congressman Steve Chabot and Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner, both of whom were involved in the impeachment of Bill Clinton, and they detailed the steps that were taken at that time to make sure that it was being done in a fair and impartial sort of way. None of those things are happening today. So it's really not a matter of whether Democrats are somehow breaking rules or something like that. But, you know, you don't have to be a lawyer, certainly. You don't have to know much about impeachment to just get the sense that, hey, something this important should be done, and we ought to be going out of our way to do it in as nonpartisan and fair way as possible, and none of those steps are being taken today.
We're talking with Tom Gipping. He is Deputy Director of the Edwin Meese Center for Legal and Judicial Studies and a Senior Legal Fellow at the Great Heritage Foundation, and we're delighted to have Tom. You know, it seems, Tom, that we can go back and say this is the way they did it with Clinton, this is the way they did it with Nixon, but that's only precedent. The truth is, we're kind of stepping along in a very open path, because our founding fathers didn't really get into any detail about impeachment. I mean, people will even argue about what is a high crime and what is a misdemeanor, and if it's a misdemeanor is impeachable. Is this a misdemeanor? And aren't misdemeanors small, little things? So it's like our founding fathers said, you know what? We're going to let the Congress, which means the Senate and the House, decide whether or not the president is doing good things or not doing good things. I mean, it almost has to be political in some sense, I guess, but you know what I mean? What the heck is going on here?
It's political in the sense that politicians are involved, but I have to disagree with you a little bit.
Sure.
The founding fathers, when they put the phrase high crimes and misdemeanors in the Constitution, Article 2, Section 4, as the category of actions that would be potentially impeachable, they didn't make that up. That phrase had been used in English impeachments for more than two centuries. The Founding Fathers debated whether to make that category narrow or broad, vague or specific. They gave us a lot of guidance about what that category means. We also know just from common sense that, look, our political system is based on the people through elections choosing their leaders. Impeachment short-circuits that process, and therefore impeachment ought to be the very, very rare exception. So it wasn't just a spin the wheel, the House can do whatever they want. Do they have the power to impeach the president for, you know, the color of his hair? Sure, I suppose so, if they have the votes. But that doesn't mean that that's a legitimate use of that authority.
Right, but
you mentioned precedent. Okay, the way that we did it in every other impeachment in American history isn't binding today in like a legal sense, but it sure does give us guidance about how we ought to do it, and there's a burden on Democrats today to show why they are, for the first time, doing it very differently.
Right. Hey, there's no question about the importance of doing this correctly. It's just, maybe necessarily our founding fathers in many ways made that wording. I mean, high crime and a misdemeanor. Well, a misdemeanor, to my way of thinking, is something small crime. You know, you don't go to jail for a misdemeanor typically, right?
There too, I'll have to disagree with you.
Okay.
The point of understanding the Constitution is not what a word means to my ear today in 2019. Interpreting the Constitution means what did that word mean to those who put it in the Constitution.
Right.
misdemeanor sounds like something that's minor, but it's a phrase. It's not high crimes, which are serious, misdemeanors, which are not. That phrase, again, had 200 years of use before the Founding Fathers put it in the Constitution in 1787. And it is a very narrow category of very serious misconduct by our leaders, and in particularly by the president, so serious that we can't wait until the next election. We have to remove him now.
So what is the word, excuse me for interrupting you, but what is the word, as they interpreted it, what was the word misdemeanor meant to mean back then?
It's a phrase. It is not two separate words that mean separate things. High crimes and misdemeanors is a category of misconduct by, and they had in mind particularly the president, who, it's almost like it's an offense against our system of government, where he's acting so inconsistent with the way our system of government was designed to operate, where he's abusing his authority so seriously that we literally cannot tolerate him being in office.
So are you saying then that according to our Founding Fathers, for a president to be impeached, that is to be indicted or to be tried, he has to have conducted a series of things that would, as a conglomeration, you mean, because high crimes and I know we're getting very technical here, but do you see what I'm saying? Because typically we look at the word misdemeanor as misdemeanors as things not as important,
right,
as other.
But again, that's what it means to us today. That's not the correct way of understanding what the Constitution.
So what did the?
I would encourage folks to go to the Heritage Guide to the Constitution.
Okay.
You can get it online. It literally gives a little essay by a legal expert on every single clause in the Constitution. Find Article or Section 2, Article 2, Section 4, and it'll give you a little further explanation. Also, at heritage.org, you can find a paper that I and one of my colleagues published a couple months ago about the constitutional history and practice of impeachment that, again, gives a little bit more, puts a little more flesh on the bones. It's not a blank slate. And again, it's easy to get lost in the weeds. The bottom line is, did the president do something that was so serious that we cannot wait 1 year to pass judgment in the next election?
Right.
That's the idea. And it really does sort of begin to let you sort out, well, you know, certain stuff, it might not look real good. We might be bothered by it a little bit. But it certainly isn't that serious. We can vote him out next year if we think it's bad.
Oh, listen,
right?
I'm on your side on that.
So that's the idea. That's the way to understand it. It's certainly not supposed to be used simply by your political enemies for differences of opinion about policy, or we don't like the fact that you were elected 3 years ago, so we want you out. We certainly know it's not supposed to be used for that.
Do you think, Tom, and finally, do you think that they're actually going to go to an impeachment vote?
I do, yeah. I do think the House, if I had to make a prediction, I think the House will impeach the president. But he certainly will not be convicted by the Senate. The House can impeach by a simple majority, and they have the votes to do that. But in the Senate, you'd have to get 20 Republicans to vote to convict the president. And remember, when he's convicted, he's automatically removed from office. You're not going to get 20 Republicans to say, we want to remove him from office.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where they're going with this. I mean, and even if they did, they have Mike Pence.
Well,
where are they going with all of it?
Sure, Democrats know that he's not going to be convicted. He's not going to be removed. That's not their objective. Their objective is to continue simply the fight against Trump because their constituency wants them to do it, and they want him to be as sort of damaged and dirtied as possible going into next year's election. But they know this isn't going to remove him from office.
Yeah, this is just a... what did Alice say in the Alice in Wonderland? This is getting curiouser and curiouser.
Yeah, right.
Really
yeah.
is. Tom, thank you so very much, sir, for coming on. Really appreciate it. Very good discussion. I hope
Glad
we can talk. Yeah, I hope we can talk again, my friend.
Absolutely.
All right, there he is, Tom Shipping of the Great Heritage Foundation. We're going to take our break. And when we come back, I think we've got a very, very energized Andrew the Master Barber. He's bringing his barber pole with him. We're going to take a look at what has been going on most recently in the effort to oust Donald Trump.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
Let's go bowling!
Let's go bowling, heard on the Tantalk Radio Network every Wednesday, 11 a.m. to 12 Eastern Time. Sponsored by 12 Strike and Innovative Ball Spinner. If you bowl, if you haven't bowled in a while, or if you never bowled, why not you be one of 65 million people have bowled last year? Listen to the tip of the week, bowling stars, old and new. Let's go bowling show, gobowlingshow.com.
Hello out there. Tune in every Saturday at noon on Tan Talk for Connecting Caregivers with me, Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregivers. Every Saturday at noon, we will find resources, education, and a shoulder for the caregivers. I know it's tough, but we can work it out together. Look forward to you tuning in on Saturdays at noon, where you'll have tons of information. Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregivers.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio, heard every Wednesday on the Tantalk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food & Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com.
My bridges all.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back. And delighted to have not Andrew, the master barber, but we have his smarter and better looking brother, Angelo.
Hey, how are you, my friend?
We're doing very good, sir. Thank you for being with us. I take it Andrew is running around still, huh?
Yeah, he's still hung up at Newark, I guess, New Jersey airport there.
Oh, wow.
Trying to get out of there.
Wow. Yeah, of course, as we had said on our previous show, your dear mother passed away, and Andrew went up there to join you in the services. And, Angelo, it's very good of you to join us here this morning to talk a little bit about what is continuing to be the most, I don't know, the strangest goings-on in Washington, D.C. that I, in all my years, has ever witnessed. This impeachment attempt of a sitting president. This is the most, I don't know, do you think, Angela, this is the most divisive country in a long time that we've ever experienced, or is it just the media trying to make it that way?
Well, I think it's the media and both have tried to make it this way.
You broke up a little bit. I'm going to ask you to repeat that.
Yes, I think it's both the Democrats and the media that have divided this country. Because they just didn't like this president. 19 minutes after he was sworn in as president, called for his impeachment.
Yeah,
you got what some high crimes and misdemeanors did he do in 19 minutes?
It's unbelievable. By the way, I appreciate your fans in the background there. Say hi to them. So yeah, you're right. 19 minutes. I heard that. In other words, it didn't take anything for someone to get on in front of a camera that didn't like Donald Trump, a Democrat, to say that they were looking into things already about his election.
I don't know if it was one of the congressmen that actually started it, but within 19 minutes after his swearing in, they started calling in for his impeachment.
Yeah.
Which goes to show you that this is purely, purely political. And if I hope the American people see it, that they were so sore that they lost, that they were expected to win by thousands of votes, that they're still bitter about it.
I don't know if you had a chance to hear it, Angelo, but Tom Gipping of the Heritage Foundation was on just before you.
Right.
And my final question was whether or not the actual impeachment will occur. He said he didn't think it will.
I don't think it will either. It has to go through the Senate, right? They have to get at least...
No. The impeachment is takes place in the House. That's...
Well, in the House, yes.
He said he doesn't even think that they're going to hold a vote. Do you understand what I'm saying? They're not even going to hold a vote.
Well, then they're just doing this to dirty the president. That's all they're doing.
Right. Well, he doesn't think in the long run that Nancy Pelosi will actually say, okay, it's time to take up the impeachment vote. One of the reasons being that when they took up this inquiry vote, which is no more than an extension of continuing to have these committee hearings without any formal impeachment,
right,
that no Republican voted for the continuation of the inquiry vote. Not one. And two Democrats voted, along with all the other Republicans, to stop the inquiry. So she's going to look and say, you know what? We're not going to get any Republicans to vote for impeachment. None. And we're going to look like we're just driving this because we don't like Trump and we're Democrats.
Right.
So I just want to get your thought on that. You also don't think that there's going to be that vote?
No.
Okay. So
Right now, in order to do the thing, they have to have it has to be the whole House, right?
In order to indict the president, which is the impeachment vote, the impeachment takes place in the House. That's the vote to whether or not to charge him with a crime.
To indict him, to charge him with a crime.
If a simple majority of the 435 members of the House, in other words, 270 whatever, vote yes, then the Senate convenes a trial.
That's right.
That's how that works. And the Senate, each of the 100 senators are jurors in the trial. They sit and listen. They sit and listen to evidence. And then 67 of them have to vote yes to convict him. So that's how that whole, that's how the process works.
They just don't have the votes in the Senate to even do that.
So now I want to ask you something else. Rand Paul, who is really a libertarian kind of guy in Republicans' clothing out of Kentucky, now says he may very well out the whistleblower.
He should.
He said this. I don't wish harm on anybody. I've been the victim of political violence not once but twice. And then he mentions the fact that he was in that baseball field in 2017 when that nutty gunman shot Scalise. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then he was left with a broken rib after an assault by a neighbor. Who was apparently a Democrat as well. So he said, I know what political violence is all about. He says, I say to the media, do your job, print his name, meaning the whistleblower.
Right.
So what do you think?
I think he should be outed, yes. Because you should know who your accuser is. And number one, this fellow or woman, whoever it may be, is not really a whistleblower. Everything is just hearsay.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to accuse somebody, right?
Yep.
Have that person outed so that this way the person who's being accused know who it is, and you can say, hey, where did you get your information from, right?
You know, everybody pretty much in Washington knows who it is, right? I mean, all the commentators know, all the newspapers know, all of the congressmen know.
Why don't they say it?
Rand Paul knows who it is. We said it, and I'll say it again. I'll tell you who it is. I don't know if you were with us when I broke this.
Who is it?
His name is Eric Sciarmella.
Yeah.
Eric Sciarmella. In fact, I think your brother was telling me he hated to hear it was an Italian. Anyway, Eric Sciarmella is the guy. And the reason that I am telling you this is because Real Clear Politics disclosed the name. And they disclosed it because of the public's interest, they said, in learning details of an effort to remove a sitting president and making accusations against him who has what they call, quote, some indicia of an arguable political bias. In other words, the whistleblower was doing it because he was a Trump-hating Democrat. That's what they're saying.
Okay.
Now, from
what I understand, I've been listening to the news reports and stuff, didn't this fellow work in the Ukraine?
Let me tell you about him. 33 years old, registered Democrat, held over from the Obama administration. Previously worked with Joe Biden and previously worked for the former CIA director John Brennan, a Trump hater.
Mm-hmm.
He is a vocal critic of Trump who helped initiate the Russia collusion investigation of the Trump campaign during the 2016 election. So, this guy, who is not even a firsthand witness to the phone call that everybody is trying to impeach Trump on. Mm-hmm. Not a first-hand witness. He got his information from somebody else. In other words, he got hearsay information.
Right.
And then runs and tries to turn himself into a whistleblower. But before he turns himself into a whistleblower, he approaches somebody on Schiff's, Adam Schiff's committee, and says, look, I want to become a whistleblower. And I'm coming to you guys first so that you can assist me in whistleblowing. In other words, Angelo, the fix was in.
Well, if this individual worked on the dirty dossier, is that what he did?
He worked, apparently, from what I'm reading here, they said that a vocal critic of Trump who helped initiate the Russia collusion investigation.
He helped in that individual should be investigated by the Attorney General and the federal prosecutor, Durham.
Yep.
For alleging to do a coup. He should be held for treason. Not just being a whistleblower, he should be held for treason.
He might very well be in the midst of being investigated by John Durham.
Clapper, you know that. Along with Clapper and Brennan. These people should go to jail. If all this stuff is coming out now that he worked on this collusion thing, he should go to jail. He's no longer a whistleblower.
Yeah. So the media is refusing to out the guy. And I've always thought that Rand Paul, no matter whether you like him or not, is a straight arrow. I mean,
I like Rand Paul.
I think he's a straight arrow, though. I mean, forgetting about his politics, he seems like the kind of a guy that likes to, you know, he'll tell you what he means and means what he tells you, you know, that kind of a guy.
Right.
He says he's about ready to help out this guy that everybody already knows. It's just a matter, the public doesn't know. Everybody else knows. But apparently the public doesn't have a right to know who the whistleblower is in this case. And, of course, you can have the other argument, as you know, that if you're trying to throw some guy out of the White House, doesn't the president have a right to confront the accuser?
Absolutely. Just like in any court of law.
And especially when the whistleblower is doing all of this on hearsay?
Besides.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is why the whole thing's a farce. Let's be honest.
Well, they're wasting our taxpayer dollars. And these Democrats should be held accountable for that, wasting our money, American public's money, and they should be legislating, not trying to get rid of a president.
Yeah, well, I can't agree.
We're paying them to do a job, and they're not doing it.
Yeah.
And actually, they should withhold their paychecks for not doing their job.
Yeah.
Their paychecks should be halted for not doing their job.
Right. Right, indeed. Well, I want to thank you, Angelo, so much for coming on.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
Always a pleasure to have you on, especially today. If you talk with Andrew, tell him that we really hope he finds his gate. He's got to get on that plane. Otherwise, you're going to be stuck having to deal with him for another couple of days.
That's okay.
All right, Angelo, thank you so much, sir.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Our pleasure, always. There he goes, Angelo, the smarter, better-looking brother of Andrew, the Master Barber. We're going to take our final break. And among other things, when we come back, we are going to give you the top 10 most vulnerable senators up for election.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
If you would like to become a wholesale buyer of the premium quality longevity product that you hear about right here on the Tantalk Radio Network for personal service, you can pick up the phone right now and call Lola at 727-441-3311. Again, that's Lola at 727-441-3311. Or for even faster service, log on to tantalkhealth.com. That's tantalkhealth.com. Here's your health and longevity.
Hey, you.
Who, me?
Not you, the hot one.
Hi, what can I do for you?
Aren't you that lady that's on that radio show called The Ameritech Connection?
Why, yes, I am. We're live every Thursday at 5 p.m. on Tan Talk Radio Network. Right, Mike?
That's right, Sharon. Live in a condo or homeowners association? Do you have issues? How about questions? We cover it all and more. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m.
What time again?
That's 5 p.m. every Thursday on Tan Talk Radio Network, 1340 a.m. and 106.1 FM.
Show me the money.
It's the Employment Opportunity Hour with Gene Hodge every Thursday night from 7 until 8.
So the purpose of the show is to help you out there to find something that you enjoy doing instead of a job. And at the start of the show, I normally give out a formula, which I know will guarantee you to find the type of job that you want right now.
Find out the formula to an enjoyable job with Gene Hodge's Employment Opportunity Hour every Thursday night from 7 until 8 here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Show me the money.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Okay, we're back for the final segment of Freedom Works. This being a Wednesday, thank you so very much for being with us. And here is a story that we kind of billboarded at the beginning of the program about scientists now saying that because of our efforts to combat climate change, one of the things we got to do is to figure out a way to have fewer people roaming this earth. Now, 40 years ago, scientists from about 50 nations went to Geneva, Switzerland, and they were talking about what was then called the CO2 climate problem. Now, that's 40 years ago. They said at the time, with reliance on fossil fuels having helped trigger that oil crisis in 1979, they predicted global warming would eventually become a major challenge to the environment. Now, four decades later, a larger group of scientists are sounding what you might call a much more urgent alarm. More than 11,000 so-called experts. Now, when they say the word experts, duck under your chair or your table or your bed. You know, whenever you hear a guy's an expert or a woman is an expert, they're not. You know, they're not. Well, I'm an expert on such and such. Really? And then they run with that, you know? And so now you're going to have to hold them to a higher standard because they're going to know more than you about it. Anyway, so-called 11,000 experts are calling for a critical addition to this fossil fuel problem. There needs to be fewer human beings on the planet. Now, how are we going to do that? Why don't we take everybody over the age of, say, 75, start there, and euthanize them? Would that help? In other words, we, you know, the younger people need them around, but the older people, they're kind of in the way, right? So here's what the declaration is. We declare, with more than 11,000 scientist signatories from around the world, clearly and unequivocally, that planet Earth is facing a climate emergency. Okay. So How are they going to do all of this? The scientists are making specific calls for policymakers to quickly implement systemic change to energy, food, and economic policies. But they go one step further into the territory of population control. It must be stabilized and ideally gradually reduced. Now, how are we going to do that, right? Well, they don't say specifically. I guess there's a couple of ways of doing it if you don't go out and shoot somebody. You got to have less children. So how are you going to do that? Well, there's two things you can do these days, right? Let's be honest. We just have less lovemaking. That'll do it. And if that's not enough, then we can always go and have abortions. Those are the two things, right? Unless you're going to euthanize people. So instead of at the old end, they're going to do people in at the young end. So this is what we've come to. Now, does anybody stay awake at night worrying about how many people are roaming the planet these days? Really? Are they worried? I've heard since I was a little boy that we've got to curtail the population because we're going to run out of ability to feed them. Have you ever heard that? We're going to run out of we won't have enough food for everybody. If you actually stepped off the planet Earth and kind of looked down on it, do you know how little of the landmass is covered by human beings? How many people are living in Antarctica, just for an example? 3? Maybe 4. Think of all those areas in the desert. Think of all of the landmass, even in the United States, where there's nobody. If you go out to the Great Plains states, especially in the northern area, or you go to North Dakota, or you go to Wyoming and wander the entire state of Wyoming and count how many people are there. So I'm not so sure that we're running out of space for our people. Are we running out of food? I don't think so. We're actually coming up with other ways now to genetically increase the food supply, aren't we? Have you ever heard anywhere in your life, really, that there's not enough food? It's not that there's not enough food. There might be a problem with delivering the food, but there's plenty of food. It's getting it to the right people. And, you know, we always worried about people starving in Africa when I was a little boy. Well, you can get food to those people. They've had a distribution problem, but not a food problem. So anyway, I'm not so sure. I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm not so sure that the Earth needs fewer people. Not at this stage, anyway. In fact, in many cases, if you look at the populations of certain groups, they are not increasing. Some are just running in place. So there seems to be something's in nature kind of takes care of these kinds of things without man having to intervene. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Okay, I'm going to wake up Tom. Tom, you got to be awake because here's what you got to do now, Tom. I want you to get up out of that chair and go over to the drums over there in the corner. You'll notice that Big Ed's fingerprints are on those drumsticks, but I need you to get over there. And we're going to do our top 10, Tom.
I'm ready.
Okay, buddy. He's over there. There it is. There's the first one. Tom, I haven't said number 10 yet, but that's okay because you had to practice. You had to practice. So we're going to do it that way, though. So Tom's ready. Get your drumsticks up, Tom. We're going to give... Is that one of those little... Whatever you call that thing, the dings.
The triangle?
Yeah, the triangle. So he's got a triangle and the drums. These are the 10 most vulnerable senators, by the way, Tom, for 2020, according to Roll Call magazine and Roll Call websites. So you ready? Here we go, for real. Number 10. You know, you sound just like Ed when you do it. You're good. Number 10 is
John... He taught me.
He did? Well, he taught you well. Number 10 is John Cornyn. He is a Republican from Texas. He is in a state that Trump won by 9 percentage points, and Cornyn won in his last election. Cornyn won by 27 percentage points over his rival. But they list him as the 10th most vulnerable senator. And you got to remember that one-third of the Senate is up for election. One-third. So that's either 33 or 34 senators. So out of 34, let's say, John is number 10 most vulnerable. All right, number 9. Number 9 is Jeanne Shaheen. Now, she is a Democrat from New Hampshire. And Hillary Clinton, did you know Hillary Clinton in 2016 won New Hampshire by 0.4 of a percentage point? Well, Shaheen won it by 3 points, but she's very vulnerable in New Hampshire. New Hampshire is one of those states, used to be considered very libertarian, but she's got to watch herself. All right, number 8, David Perdue. He's a Republican from Georgia, a state that Trump won by 5 points and Perdue won by 8 points. But Perdue is running, actually, he's got a Republican running against him in the primary. And he may have more trouble with that primary contest than he would if he wins and goes on to the general election. All right, number 7. Joni Ernst from Iowa, Republican. Now, Trump won Iowa by 9 percentage points in 2016. Ernst won it 6 years ago by 8 points. But Iowa is one of those states that is not as reliably Republican as it used to be. All right, number 6. Gary Peters, Democrat from Michigan. Now, Trump won Michigan by 0.2 of a percentage point. And Peters won by 13 points. But Michigan is turning a lot more populist, and Peters has to watch out. Number 5. Number 5 is Susan Collins. Susan Collins might be the most moderate Republican in the Senate. She's from Maine. Maine won for Clinton, Hillary Clinton, by 3 percentage points in 2016. But Collins, 6 years ago, a Republican, won it by 37 points. All right, number 4. Tom Tillis, Republican, North Carolina. North Carolina won for Trump by 4 percentage points. Tillis won 6 years ago by only 2. North Carolina is one of those states that can go either way. You got to worry about it. Number 3. Martha McSally, a Republican from Arizona. Number 2. I got to go quicker. Sorry about that, Tom. Cory Gardner, Republican from Colorado. And number 1. Thank you, Tom. You're quick. Number 1 is Doug Jones, a Republican from Alabama. So there you are, my friends. I want to thank Tom. He did a wonderful job helping me on the show. Stay tuned for the Craft Beer Hour with Kenny and Bill. Bye for now.
WTAN, Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City.
FM 102.3.
WZHR, Zephyr Hills.
FM 104.3.
Listen.